Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is October 23rd, 2016, and this is episode 123, NinXS.
I get it. That's clever.
Thank you. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're discussing this week's surprise reveal of the Nintendo Switch, formerly known, of course, as the NX. So, buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy McWaggy, you want to get us started?
Yeah, so if you were listening over on the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, which is what we do with Trainer Salker, you might have heard us talking about the Pokemon Sun and Moon demo. Now, this demo is definitely worth your time, because not only can you get an Ash Greninja, which you can transfer to your final Sun and Moon game, you will also be able to get special little rewards and events as you as you load the game back up on subsequent dates. So we're not going to spoil all of the special things for you, but if you'd like to see an overview of what has been figured out so far, you can check out the link over at Silicon Era on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And yeah, if you haven't played the Sun and Moon demo yet, highly recommended. We'll probably talk about it very briefly during our What's Up.
Excellent. Let's see. We also have word here of the announcement of Red Dead Redemption 2. It has been officially announced for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. We now have a full-length trailer for it, and it'll be due out in fall of 2017.
Yeah, a lot of people excited about this. I know a lot of people were very big fans of the first one. I missed out on that one, so.
Well, it is playable as a backwards compatible title on Xbox One.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard that, you know, people enjoy it a lot more than they typically do the GTA games. And I've had a certain degree of fun with the GTA games, so I definitely think I owe Red Dead Redemption 1 a try.
Awesome. We also have word here that the character Mitsuki will be joining the battle in Ultimate Ninja Storm 4 Road to Boruto as a playable character. This is, of course, really cool for fans of Naruto and Boruto. Mitsuki is the son of Orochimaru. You probably know exactly what that means if you are a fan of Naruto. If you don't, I'm not worried about the fact I just spoiled it to you, because that will just sound like nonsense. Either way, Road to Boruto will be releasing on February 2nd in Japan and February 3rd in North America and Europe for the PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One.
The character of Hit, who is known as the legendary assassin from Universe 6 in Dragon Ball Super, is going to be playable in Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2. I am super excited for that. You know, that's coming out in just a few days, probably by the time you hear this, actually.
Yeah,
on the 25th. So, you know, definitely excited. He was a really cool character to watch in the universe sort of battle. I guess, what was that arc called? I can't really remember, but
we're just going to call it the Universal Tournament. I don't know.
Yeah. He was definitely a really cool character. So glad to see him join the roster.
Yeah, me too. Xenoverse 2 releases in North America on October 25th for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, in Europe on the 28th, and in Japan on November 2nd. We also have word here that if you pre-order Xenoverse 2, you will get a free downloadable character in the form of Goku Black. This for me is a big deal and is entirely why I have pre-ordered Xenoverse 2.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Xenoverse 2 in action.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pokken Tournament for arcades is going to be, or actually at this point, has had Scizor added. This is the evolution of Scyther, of course, from Generation 1. He is really cool and looks like a pretty fun, you know, as far as Pokken is fun to me. That must have been a shade. I mean, so like, Scizor looks like a pretty cool character in Pokken Tournament. There's no announcement yet if that character is coming to the Wii U, but please look forward to it. Please listen here for news if we have it, I guess.
Awesome. We also have word here that Fantasy Life 2 for smartphone is now going to be called Fantasy Life Online. You may recall, of course, this is Level 5's upcoming sequel to Fantasy Life. But something that's very interesting, this is of course expected to launch this year for Android and iOS in Japan, is that it's no longer being branded as the official like sequel to Fantasy Life. As for what that means writ large, we have yet to know, and it's something I look forward to hearing a little more about.
Yeah, this could be dangerous because Fantasy Life was a great game, and so bundling it in with the whole sort of mobile architecture and microtransactions, dangerous.
Excellent. We also have word here that this week's upcoming release of World of Final Fantasy will have a Xenogears summonable Mirage in the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's something that I think a lot of people are going to be really excited about. You know, World of Final Fantasy is kind of a very fan servicey title, and to see Squeenix doing fan service work for non-Final Fantasy games in this series opens up a lot of really enticing possibilities for those of us who have been hardcore fans for a long time.
So there's going to be a new trailer and some information for Super Robot Taisen 5 on October 31st. This is going to be via a Nico Nico live stream. They're going to be showing the new trailer for Super Robot Taisen 5 with some additional information, and also talk about Super Robot Taisen. Is that Cross Omega?
Yep.
I assume that anytime I see an X now in a Japanese game title, it's Cross.
Yeah, it generally is.
And so, yeah, so we'll give you more information about that when that stream has happened.
And you know, we always talk about the Super Robot Taisen games in sort of the lead up to their release. A lot of times we stop talking about them after a point. In this case, we probably won't, because this will be releasing in Japan and Asia in 2017 for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita, and the Asian release will have English subtitles.
Yay!
So this is going to make for a real easy import for a lot of us, and as a result, we will continue focusing on this one.
Excellent.
Overwatch has added its first PvE event. This is the Halloween event, Halloween Terror. It is a lot of fun. It is a brawl. Basically, you and three friends team up against a horde of enemies in the Junkenstein's Revenge scenario. It is a ton of fun. I've actually gone back to playing Overwatch every day to try and do this event at least once a day.
Oh, wow.
It is live on the PS4, Xbox One, and PC until November 1st.
I better get on
that. Strongly recommend it. I think it is the most fun you can have with Overwatch right now. I know not everyone agrees, but for me, co-op horde modes are like the most fun. So I'm super into
it. I love the Halloween costumes.
Oh, yeah. Halloween costumes in this game are fantastic. We also have word that The Witch and the 100 Nights 2 will be releasing in Japan in winter of 2017. In addition, we have an update here on the sales of the Famicom Classic Mini. This is, of course, the Japanese version of the NES Classic Mini. It has sold out, basically, via pre-orders already.
Oh, snap.
Amazon, Rakuten, Yodobashi...
Did you get your hands on one?
...have all announced a sellout on their pre-orders. We do not yet know if there will be additional inventory available, you know, at the time of release, but for now, it looks like we will not be seeing any more of these available for pre-order in Japan. I did not get a pre-order in. I'm salty about it.
Yeah, this little Famicom, so cute. Destiny's Festival of the Lost is going to be returning on Tuesday, October 25th, so as you hear this. So it's going to run through November 8th, and you can get some spoops. They're masks, right?
Indeed, yes. And we also have word here that the Orange Box is now backward compatible on the Xbox One. You know, Kotaku uses this opportunity to suggest that people can replay Half-Life 2, but I think people should just replay Portal.
Oh, of course.
We also
have... Hey, that means Team Fortress, right?
Yeah, Portal that 2? Would mean that. Of course, you would be playing the old console version, not, you know, without any of the updates that game has seen in the last 8 years.
That's true.
So have fun with that. We also have word that the upcoming The Silver Case remaster by Grasshopper Manufacture and Playism, which of course has been released worldwide on PCs, is also coming to PlayStation 4 in 2017.
In Japan and North America and Europe.
Yeah. Grasshopper will be publishing it in Japan. Nipponichi Software America will be handling the North American and European releases.
Yeah, this is a Suda Goichi golden oldie.
Indeed. Zelda, Spirit Tracks, and Breath of Fire have both joined the Wii U Virtual Console console. Or I'm sorry, actually, Zelda Spirit Tracks is a Wii U Virtual Console title, and Breath of Fire is a new Nintendo 3DS exclusive Virtual Console title. We also have word that Seventh Rebirth is an upcoming mobile RPG by the producers of Final Fantasy XI, as well as several other well-loved Japanese game devs.
Oh, wow. And that's coming from Gung Ho.
This is coming courtesy of Gung Ho. It'll be launching in fall of 2016. And I think the other big name here that people are going to be excited about is music by Yasunori Mitsuda-san. Please look forward to it.
Mobius Final Fantasy is coming to PC in Japan in November. It's going to be on Steam.
Exciting.
I wonder if we're going to see a Steam release here.
I would expect so. We also have word here that the Sonic the Hedgehog expansion pack for LEGO Dimensions will be in stores on November 18th.
Cute.
Summer Lesson, the controversial VR game for PlayStation VR, will be releasing in Asia with English subtitles in early 2017.
Oh, this game,
of course, is somewhat controversial due to the fact that it is kind of dealing with a sort of AI-type personality character who you basically, as her tutor for English, sort of flirt with her in a way that is somewhat inappropriate. There are a lot of people who have a lot of feelings about this game. I'm trying to hold off judgment until I can check it out myself.
Level 5 has announced that Yo-Kai Watch 3 Sukiyaki version is coming out on December 15th for the 3DS. So that's something to look forward to. I'm hoping that we'll get to a point where the Yo-Kai Watch releases catch up and, you know, kind of to where we are with Pokemon, and where we get them simultaneously. As you know, we just got Bony Spirits and Fleshy Souls, which are Yo-Kai Watch 2. So hopefully we'll get Yo-Kai Watch 3, which are Sushi, Tempura, and now Sukiyaki. I hope they keep those subtitles for the American releases.
They're going to change it to Hamburger, Hot Dog, and French Fry. Come on now.
Well, is Yo-Kai Watch 3 the one that takes place partially in the United States?
Yes, it is.
Oh, then they probably will be Hamburger, Hot Dog, and French Fry.
We also have word here that Corpse Party for 3DS is releasing this week, just in time for Halloween. By the time you're hearing this episode, Corpse Party will be available on 3DS.
Oh, and it comes with cute little figurines.
Indeed. And we have word here that Criminal Girls Invite Only, another controversial MOE game, will be releasing on Steam for Windows PCs on January 11th, 2017.
And last but not least, but very spoopy, the Amnesia Collection is coming to PS4 on November 22nd, which will have Amnesia The Dark Descent, the Amnesia Justine DLC, and then the sequel, Amnesia A Machine for Pigs. So a little bit late for the Halloween spoops, but, you know, you can have a Nightmare Before Christmas now.
Ah, well done. All right, well, with all that having been said, that's it for our follow-ups. Let's get started with some news.
News. Oh my God, news.
All right, our first big piece of news here is that the creator of Suikoden, Yoshitaka Murayama-san, who has not worked on any major titles for more than 6 years at this point, I'm sorry, more than 10 years, although, you know, more than 6 years remains true, is going to be returning in the upcoming The Alliance Alive title for 3DS. The Alliance Alive is being sort of positioned as a new classic JRPG from the creators of Legend of Legacy. This is, of course, something that I think a lot of us are really excited about. You know, Legend of Legacy missed the mark a little bit, but it was still, I mean, overall, not a bad game. It just, it was a little bit closer, I think, to some of the Romancing Saga games than especially Western JRPG fans were really comfortable with. But I definitely think they have it in them to make a new classic RPG, and I'm super stoked that they're going to keep trying.
Excellent. So we have word from Inti Creates via a recent Nico Nico livestream that they did, that they are working on Galgun VR. The title is tentative, but this is going to take a VR twist on the Galgun experience, presumably.
Indeed. I am excited for this and also trepidatious, so we'll see how it
turns out. Yeah, like, oh no, panty shot.
We also have word here of the upcoming Final Fantasy 14 expansion. This will be launching in summer of 2017, and it is called Stormblood. Similar to how the last expansion was very focused on the Dragoon job. It looks like the new expansion is going to be centered on the Monk job.
Yeah,
it
there's a sexy monk in the trailer.
It is going to have new job classes, and it's going to take players back to Alamigo in order to help the nation free itself from Garlean control. Looks like very exciting stuff, and I will probably come back to Final Fantasy XIV for a while to play with it and enjoy it, even though I already know I'm just going to end up leaving it for WoW again.
Aw, and it looks like it's either maybe going to have a Red Mage or a Dancer class, is what a lot of people are saying.
I'm hoping for both.
It'd be interesting.
We also have word here of the upcoming smartphone game, Zoids Field of Rebellion. This appears to be a multiplayer smartphone RPG of sorts that is obviously multiplayer and sort of a little bit more of a mature, darker, serious bent on the material.
Yeah, I didn't know that Zoids had any serious material.
I don't think it typically does.
I didn't, sort of branching
into a new direction.
I honestly forgot that Zoids was still around.
Even know that Zoids is still around. I think this is you could call this a comeback.
I mean, there were a couple Zoids games back in like the 360 era, and I remember then being like, Zoids is still around? Because I remember that being around in the 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, Star Ocean Anamnesis has been announced, which is a smartphone game.
Excellent. This is a full-fledged Star Ocean game that is just happened to be published on smartphones. So we hope to have more information soon, and we will almost certainly be talking about it.
All right.
With all that having been said, it is time for our new segment, Culture Club, where we talk about our favorite bits of gaming culture, gamer culture, and, you know, just basically all the news stories that don't fit into any of our other segments. The first big one here, of course, is that Vice Gaming has rebranded. They are now going to be known as Waypoint, and they're going to be doing a 72-hour Twitch stream that is going to be starting on the 28th in order to celebrate the launch of their new venture, so to speak.
That's great. Vice Gaming already has assembled probably one of the best teams I have seen in games journalism. You know, some great people who have, departed some other sites, but I think it's really going to be a really good team.
Indeed, absolutely. We also have word here of Persona 4 Arena, and that is that the director of Persona 4 Arena, as well as Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, Kazuhisa Wada-san, made an appearance at the recent Toshinsai tournament, where he definitively stated he wants to make a Persona 5 Arena, and he hopes he gets the chance. I'm really excited about that. Obviously, Persona 5 is already available in Japan for PS3 and PS4. It'll be releasing here in North America February 14th, 2017, and I'm already a huge fan of the character designs and everything, so I think it would be great to see adapted into an arena game.
Bravely, also known as the Bravely Default series, had a little teaser on Twitter to celebrate their fourth anniversary. It was a very cute illustration, along with the Twitter text, Bravely's fourth anniversary. We apologize for the lack of information lately, but there might be something soon.
Yes. A lot of people are taking this as a teaser for a possible new announcement, and I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed for Bravely Third.
Excellent.
We also have word here from Suda Goichi-san that he would like to make No More Heroes 3 within the next 10 years.
Oh,
not
wow.
A whole lot more about that to say other than I sure hope that gets done.
I guess he had said that he thought it would be another 15 to 20 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. Let's hope for 10 or less. And last but certainly not least, we have word here that the Pokemon Sun and Moon demo is already running in 3DS emulators, and as a result, we have seen what Pokemon Sun and Moon look like with various visual hacks and internal resolution upgrades. I think it's definitely very, very pretty, and this is definitely the kind of thing that I'm always interested in reading about. Kotaku has a great article, and we will link you to it over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Slaggy, anything to say about that?
No, just that I can't believe how pretty the graphics look. You know, the image that's been floating around is of the Alolan Dugtrio with the blonde wigs, and I mean,
yes.
It's like really smooth.
Yeah, it really does. Really does. All right, well, with all that having been said, we do also have a little bit of a controversial piece, so...
controversial.
Oh my god.
And the TLDR here is that there was a popular mod released for Grand Theft Auto 5 that added the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 to the game. Interestingly, though, instead of this being a skin for your cell phone within the game, it is actually a new explosive device.
Oh boy.
So, unfortunately, Samsung Electronics America Inc. and its affiliates have filed complaint notices to YouTube in order to get all videos of this mod taken down via copyright claim. A lot of people are very upset about this, of course. They feel that, obviously, you know, they're using the copyright flagging tool incorrectly to get, like, videos that depict their device negatively removed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people who make this mod and the people who put videos up of this mod are like, you know, this is just a funny, cool mod for this game. It's not violating anybody's copyright, and as such, it shouldn't be being removed this way on YouTube.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, definitely a prickly situation here. I side with the gamers on this one, and if you have any thoughts on that are different, Slaggy, or any of our listeners, I would love to hear from you.
No,
slash
honestly,
them.
I think it's kind of hilarious that they put a Note 7 as
right?
explosive.
It almost, to me, seems like Streisand effect-y to be pointing this out on Samsung's part, because I think this is hilarious. If I ever get GTA 5 on PC, I'm going to install this mod. I would not have known about it if not for this.
Right?
Oh, man. Let's see. We also have a little bit of a doom and gloom piece here for you.
Yeah.
.hack/New World is having its services shut down this December. For those of you who are paying attention at home, that will be less than a year after its launch. So this definitely sucks for people who have put money into the game. Bandai Namco, they're actually going to be terminating all in-game microtransaction sales on November 18th. The game will officially come to a close on December 20th. So I still think that's a little scummy as well, for them to still be selling items in-game knowing that there is already an expiration date set. I just think it's a bit rubbish. Either way, New World had launched in Japan on Android and iPhone on January 8th, 2016.
Yeah, it's a bummer when these things flop so quickly.
Absolutely agreed. So to sort of wrap up this part of the show, we have one smash hit for all of y'all out there. And this is a piece on Kotaku. It is called The Debate Around Mafia 3's Depiction of Racism. And what I really like about this is that, you know, obviously we are a very left-leaning show. Obviously Kotaku is a fairly left-leaning website. But this piece isn't just automatically, oh, this game lets you be a person of color murdering KKK members. Awesome! Although that is an entirely true statement, and it is one that I actually think is quite awesome. This article actually goes to greater lengths than that to really talk about the depiction of racism. The way POCs are treated in the game by white characters, and really talking about, you know, the degree to which that reflects sort of real lived experiences of POCs in this country. I feel like this is a really useful article to read. I definitely open up my eyes to the way that this stuff is depicted in this games or not depicted in other games, and I strongly recommend you check it out.
Yeah, very good article.
All right, well, with all that having been said, let's get to our discussion this week.
Let's switch things up here a bit.
Yeah, well, well done. So, let me set the stage here a little bit. For those of you who don't know, and it's almost hard to believe that that will be anyone listening to this show, this past Thursday, Nintendo officially, formally announced the Nintendo NX. And in doing so, they gave us a 3-minute trailer, really showing us, you know, the gimmick, confirming, you know, what rumors we had heard, giving us a few ideas for games that are going to be coming out, and unveiling the new name, the Nintendo Switch. So, Slaggy, give me the elevator pitch for the Nintendo Switch.
It's a tablet-like console that you can take on the go with little attachments for controllers, but then you can bring it home, plug it into a console, and it'll power it up for home console use.
Excellent. So what you're telling me is that basically the vast majority of the rumors were right. This is a hybrid console handheld machine.
It is.
We also got confirmation version of the modular control scheme. That is to say that when the device is docked, you disconnect the two separate sides of the controller called the Joy-Con. Its pieces are the Joy-Con L and the Joy-Con R for left and right, and you can connect them in order to create your controller that you're using at home. You then reattach it when you're going to take it on the go.
Yeah, that's the Joy-Con grip, which will allow you to make the Joy-Con controller, which a lot of people have said looks like a puppy. It's actually a Switchy, I think is the name of the puppy that they have the internet's kind of run with.
I hadn't heard of that, but that is adorable.
It's really cute. Apparently the Joy-Con, when it's attached, when the Joy-Con L and the Joy-Con R are attached to the Joy-Con grip, people said, oh, it looks like a puppy.
Excellent. Yeah. I had seen the puppy posts, and you know, I definitely think it's very cute.
But moving on to actual news and content.
Indeed. So I'd like to hear first off a little bit about what you thought about what we saw, you know. So we saw in this 3-minute trailer, and yeah, we're grown men and we're going to talk for 30 to 40 minutes about a 3-minute trailer. Get over it. We got a glimpse of like 4 different games. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. We got to see the sort of ideas of how they feel that we'll be using this device, and we got some ideas of how the device itself works. So Saigi, first off, we got some examples in the trailer of, you know, people using the device in public settings, using it like in a plane, using it like while hanging out with your bros, like at a park or at a basketball court or something. What do you think about that? You know, and we also saw footage of each player playing using only one half of a Joy-Con, so that, as we had heard in the rumors, you basically have the Nintendo Switch on its little stand. It's effectively a 6.2-inch monitor, and you're each using what is effectively an NES-style control,
yeah,
with 4 buttons, Super Nintendo style, to play 2-player games. How do you feel about uses like that?
I mean, I feel basically like this has tried to right all of the perceived wrongs of the Wii U. I mean, there was the whole idea of the Wii U being confusing to consumers because the gamepad looked like a tablet, but it wasn't a portable device. And so, I mean, right down to the name Switch and just how modular this thing is, I think it's really showing that, you know, there are multiple uses for it. So I think right from the bat, we're seeing that there's an attempt to, you know, rather than saying, here's the specs, here's the release date, they wanted to get right out of the bat with, here's how you're going to use it, to like immediately dispel any confusion. And I think it's great. I mean, we saw some shots where I believe there looks like some sort of Pro Controller. Oh yeah, the Switch Pro Controller.
Yeah, in fact, that is definitely a thing we did see. We don't yet know when you're in portable mode, how many controllers can pair to it. So we don't know if you can use this thing for, you know, a 4-player Smash game, which, you know, while it would be probably a little tough, I would like to have the option. I mean, Nintendo already proved Smash can work portable, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I think just the amount of different ways that this can be configured is perfect for a variety of situations. We saw, like you said, it being used for travel, which, I mean, and what I'm really pleased with is that it lines up with everything we kind of thought it would be, but it makes sense, too. Like you said, I mean, in Japan, portable gaming is huge, and, you know, just being able to play on the train or at a cafe is a really big part of Japanese gaming culture. So, I mean, it makes total sense. But also, I feel like it's really trying to appeal to, you know, mobile gamers as well. I mean, something that a lot of people pointed out is that most of the people in the trailer appealed to be millennials, like, you know, people in their 20s and 30s.
There was definitely a more mature angle in the advertisement for this thing. You know, sort of similar to what we've seen with the ad campaigns for the NES Classics Mini. It definitely seems like Nintendo is sort of veering away from sort of the more typical Nintendo audience of families and moving more toward that millennial hipster type crowd.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a smart move because, you know, with Mario and, you know, all of the flagship titles, you know, they're not going to have a problem selling to families. This is really the audience that they have, struggled to reach, I feel, is kind of the more hardcore gamer. And I feel like, you know, by presenting a Vita 2.0 in some senses of it, you know, it's really going to fill a niche that, really, I mean, all we have for portable gaming is either iOS iOS, Android, or things like, you know, a 3DS. So
yeah, well, and you know, that's something that, especially in Japan, I feel like this could be huge. You know, obviously the Vita and 3DS still fairly successful in Japan. The Vita not successful to the way that the PSP is, but still head and shoulders above what the PS4 is or will ever be. So for me, to me, I should say, the Switch really is like the perfect middle ground for the Japanese audience. You know, it's going to be relatively high-end spec, you know. Early estimates do have it pegged as more like an Xbox One in terms of the level of power it can you know, run with. And the idea of playing games on that level to go is kind of unprecedented. You know, I've seen a couple of people, you know, Vita diehards who are like, oh, console games have always been available since the Vita launched. But I think most of us who have Vitas disagree with that assessment. Mm-hmm. You know, while the promise was, you know, full console experiences on the go with the Vita, I feel like that isn't really what we've gotten. And with the NX, you know, right out of the gate with, you know, Zelda Breath of the Wild, for example, I don't think we've ever seen a game with that breadth and depth available on a portable console. And I think that's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And especially in Japan, I feel like that's the only way a game like that is going to sell in 2017. I don't see the huge audiences turning out for an experience like that on a traditional, how do you say, like stationary console.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm
going to
be really, yeah.
For a game like that, the only way it's going to get sales in Japan, I think, is going to be on a portable. And I think that that's what makes this just brilliant. And the other hand is, you know, it's almost like the reverse in sort of the Western countries.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm going to be interested to see how this does over here, because I feel like most people are going to think of it like, oh, I want to play Breath of the Wild. And I mean, even me, I'm like, I'm going to have to wait until I actually touch a Joy-Con with the Joy-Con grip to see how it feels. But it looks a little bit like it might not be comfortable. I'm like already thinking like I definitely want to pick up a Switch Pro controller.
It's funny to me that you say that. First off, I want to say I come from the school of thought that the Wii U tablet controller looks awful, but when you actually hold it, is ergonomic as hell and very comfortable. But
I'm talking about with the
further from that, the Joy-Con with the Joy-Con grip to me looks like it would be similar dimensions to the Wii U Pro controller. So I feel like it looks plenty comfortable.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to find out. But you know, the whole idea of like controller clunkiness, you know, something that people consider.
Well, but I want to say, you know, it's something that every console people say, oh, Nintendo's lost it. This controller looks so unergonomic. It looks so uncomfortable. And time after time, once they release it, most of us are like, oh, actually, this is great and fits perfectly in my hands.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that Nintendo has earned the benefit of the doubt, even if I think that some of their 3DS efforts have not been terribly ergonomic. I will agree with those
haters.
That's true.
The 3DS kind of gets hand crampy.
Yeah, those are haters that I consider myself one of. So, but, you know, again, I just have to say, as far as like the concept of this thing, for me, it's an instant buy.
Mm-hmm.
I even feel like I think about it for you, Slaggy, as long as you can charge this thing without the base being involved, which to me seems like a no-brainer, I'm sure that for people who expect to be out of the house for a week, you know, traveling, that there will be like a AC adapter for it. I almost said Macy Slater, LOL.
Oh, whoa.
But, you know, and in that regard, then I think about someone like you, Slag. You spend most of your weekends, you know, out here visiting, so we can do podcasting. You crash out here.
Right, and I could bring
able to bring your Breath of the Wild with you and make progress even though you're not home.
Yeah, that's what I'm really excited about, is that I feel like it's going to increase the amount of console gaming I do, because if I want to, I'm like, oh, I don't want to turn on my TV and, like, you know, I just want to lay in bed and play it portably. I mean, I feel like it's going to, like, really open up a whole another dimension.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm going to be able to play. I mean, I feel almost, especially with the Vita dead over here. I'm sorry, the Vita's dead over here. Really, aside from mobile gaming, the idea of portable gaming is really just the 3DS. So, kind of like what makes a console game experience versus what makes a portable game experience, and how, you know, the design elements have been, you know, different historically. I think that we're going to, like, kind of see that come to an end now.
But something that I will say is that, you know, I've played plenty of games with sort of the more smaller bite-sized game design philosophy on consoles and PC.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've suffered for that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, for sure. I'm just saying that, you know, what...
I wasn't actually disagreeing with you. You know, I do think that traditionally we have treated portable game design and stationary game design as two different beasts. But I think we're learning, most of us, that there is a sweet spot in the middle, and that for a lot of us, we actually don't care about that sort of thing. We want both of these experiences.
I mean, you look at something like Mario Party. Like, I mean, now there's just going to be one Mario Party, presumably, for the Switch. And...
Well, I mean, I'm sure they'll do still Mario Party Switch 1, 2, 3, 4, etc.
Oh, no, I mean, but it's as opposed to something like we're seeing the upcoming Star Rush.
Party Rush. Oh, Star Rush. I'm sorry. So, yeah, Star Rush.
With Star Rush being, like, completely designed to be a portable game. And, like, you know, some of the problems that the Mario Party series has had in the past.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that said, and we didn't even see any sign of a Mario Party, but I mean, I think it's pretty inevitable.
Well, let's be real. This is the new Nintendo console. At this point, of course, Nintendo is indicating that they will not be terminating the 3DS line, that the Switch is meant to be its own standalone pillar of product.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to note, that's exactly what they said when the GBA was the big portable console, and the DS released. So this is sort of typical from Nintendo, that this is the line they give when they don't want to burn a bridge.
Oh yeah.
If the Switch is a flop, they will continue with DS branded handhelds. If the NX is a huge success or even a middling success, I think it's safe to say the DS line is dead. Now, I would like to ask about that, Slaggy. How do you feel about that? Is the DS something you'll miss? We have no indication of any kind of second screen, asymmetric design, anything for the Switch.
I mean, I like the DS 3DS a lot. I think it's been a very successful series of handhelds, but I do also think that, you know, to a degree, the dual screen thing is a gimmick, and I find, like, you know, a lot of the games that I like to play, you know, like, I mean, think like Pokemon Sun and Moon. I mean, yes, there's like the inventory management and stuff that you can do on the second screen, but I mean, I don't think that if we are seeing the end of a dual screen architecture from Nintendo for their portable offerings. I mean, if we're seeing the Switch in a lot of ways as the way moving forward for, I think what I'm saying is, if it's successful, I honestly see, like, even if it's not called the Switch 2, but I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't. You know, I see the Switch being the way forward if they find that it's successful. I mean, I don't think we're going to see a separate console and separate hardware for portable if this ends up working for them, at least for a while.
And I do agree with that take, and that's why, you know, for me, it's somewhat bittersweet. You know, I love having the second screen. I love dual screen design. I think Nintendo has done great things with it. I've talked here on the show previously about being very disappointed about the fact that Breath of the Wild will not use a second screen for inventory management. That feels to me like a huge step back. But I, you know, you make a good point in that, you know, we are talking about the Switch now. It is Nintendo's first attempt. If it's successful, who knows what the second attempt will look like.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that, yes, second screen...
Could you imagine if it was just like, oh, hey, it's the Switch 2, and now you can use your Switch 1 as a controller for it, as a second screen.
That would be interesting.
Right? Like, rather than turning your old console into something that needs to be discarded, it's now just the new accessory to the new device.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, you say that about, like, the second screen, but I mean, PS4 and Xbox One games, I mean, are we seeing smart glass support really anymore? Are we seeing Vita second screen support?
Well,
really?
And again, you know, I'm not coming for Nintendo.
Oh, no,
I
know.
They're offering or failing to offer something other people are offering.
I mean, it's definitely, like for Zelda, the quality of life changes that you've gotten used to.
Well, exactly. Be... stuff like Metroidvania style games. I like having my map there without having to pause, wait for it to load, unpause, wait for it to load. It's just, again, I'm a very impatient person. So for me, it's nice to have all this stuff present all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, if this is the way forward, you know, while I will miss stuff like Theater Rhythm, Final Fantasy, for example, is a game that I think it benefits from being on a dual screen device.
Uh-huh.
But an even bigger advantage to that would be if I could play Disgaea on the go and play it then on my home console, because they're the same thing, without having to do any crazy switchery of save files. Literally, you know, get off my train, pause my game, get home, drop it back into its dock, and be playing within a minute of doing so. To me, that benefit outweighs basically anything. You know, I sort of, in terms of my own game time and play style, hew closer to sort of the Japanese expectation of, you know, I myself am on a train for my work commute 2 hours every day. So, you know, typically I don't have a ton of time for gaming during the week. So if I could free up, you know, those 10 hours of commute to, like, progress in quote unquote console games, for me, that would be a revolutionary thing. Like, it would completely change even what I have to and am able to talk about here on the show, because I would be able to get so much more meaningful gaming in.
Yeah, and I mean, my thing about it as far as, like, the potential end of the DS line, with the Switch being as powerful as it's going to be, I mean, even if it's not as powerful as you hope it's going to be more powerful than the 3DS. And the thing is, yeah, if they've got that much power packed into a portable, we don't know the battery life yet, of course. So, I mean, that
early indications from people using dev kits are that the dev kits are about 3 hours of battery life. Now, more than likely, they won't be going to market with 3 hours, but it does make me think that we're going to be looking at 5 hours at a max. So, you know, comparable to the OG 3DS.
I mean, you know, nowhere near as bad as the Sega Nomad.
Right. Or even the Game Gear.
Was an attempt to be a portable console gaming on the go. Oh, Sega, so ahead of their time.
Let's see. Finish that thought, and then I'm going to move on to another little bit.
I mean, you think of something like Sun and Moon, which, I mean, looks amazing, but still is being held back by the technical limitations of the 3DS.
Well, and then we look at, you know, the 3D emulator we were talking about earlier, running Sun and Moon in HD with all these graphical effects. There's every reason to expect that the Nintendo Switch is powerful enough to run that game like that.
Yeah. And so, like, my thing is that even if, like, I mean, I know what a lot of people want is for, if we know that Pokemon Company is going to be working on the Switch, of course. And I mean, Ishihara-san said that himself. But, like, my thing is, like, it doesn't have to be a sort of, what was the Pokemon XD style, you know, where you're running around as, like, a 3D character in, you know, sort of the traditional action, third-person action sort of way, and having, like, be a Pokemon MMO. Like, my thing is, it can continue to be the same Pokemon game. They can continue to have a cartoony style and, you know, but I mean, I think not
but
having
it will
that
give them options to do artistically whatever route they want to follow.
Right. So, I mean, they can still continue the kind of, like, top-down view, and that's fine. I mean, we've seen, you know, things like what you were saying is that you've typically had, like, you know, more bite-sized versions of things, but, like, no, I mean, I could have a pixel art game. I mean, it's to the point where gaming consoles are so powerful now that you can have something that evokes a, you know, portable experience or a more retro experience, and it's, you know, able to do that. So I think it's just, like, what I'm excited for is what it's going to be potentially allowing you to do with what we thought, you know, used to think portable gaming, you know, definitely was limited based on the power of the handhelds, and that's not going to be a case anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to bring up, let's see, a couple of other tidbits. Let's see, we do have confirmation now out of Nintendo that the Switch will not have a second gameplay screen. You know, there were a lot of people who thought maybe when you were playing at home, you could use the Switch device as your gameplay screen, similar to a Wii U tablet.
Right.
The base would
you got to dock it.
Yep, you have to dock it to be playing on your TV. That's why we're talking about this. We'll link you to the article over on Polygon.com. We'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And so obviously, you know, that's why we were approaching that way. But we do know, you know, some other interesting stuff that has been confirmed. For example, all the games are going to be on cartridges.
Yeah.
More specifically, they're being called Switch game cards. How do you feel about that, Slaggy?
You know, we heard that rumor kind of buzzing up, and I mean, the thing is that like SD card sort of storage has gotten so big at this point. Like, I mean, you can get, like, you know, 32, 64 gigs and stuff, and like that technology has become so viable at this point that I mean, I think it's probably seems like it would be better than like a optical media, like
the UMD drive in the PSP,
right?
Or even more than the optical drives in the Xbox One or PlayStation 4, neither of which can actually read game discs fast enough to run games off of them. That's why you have to, you know, install games onto your hard drive to play them. So to me, that's a really interesting benefit of Nintendo Switch, is, you know, continuing to be able to play new games in, you know, 2017, I mean, without these lengthy installs.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when's the last time you saw a new computer with optical media?
Yeah, I mean, I build mine with optical drives because I rip CDs and I rip DVDs and Blu-rays. But as far as actually needing it, yeah, it's 2016, about to be 2017. This device is coming out in 2017. I don't think you need that. And I think that for most people agree that, like, that's a tech that, for the most part, we don't need. And in gaming, you know, like I was saying, saying, we're back to the point now where I think cartridges have more advantages than optical media again.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. Other bits that we do or do not know. Heavy indications that there will not be a region lock this time around.
Yes.
What do you think about that one?
Definitely great. I mean, anything that allows you to import game more easily is only a plus for me.
Indeed. Nintendo Switch going to be launching worldwide in March 2017. I remain hopeful that they're going to try to hit March 10th.
Mario.
Because, yeah, it's Mario Day. And, you know, Nintendo has been on their social media and stuff for a couple years now, making a big deal out of Mario Day every year. So I would love to see them, launch on that day. I just think that would be super cute.
I mean, I almost have to think that with March being specifically targeted, when they knew that they weren't going to do a winter 2016 release, I almost feel like they had to say, okay, well, when can we do it?
Yeah, what would be
March?
A cute day?
Oh, well, March 10th.
Yeah, totally. What do you feel about that and the fact that there's effectively only, 4 full months between this proper blow-up announcement and the release? We have November, December, January, February, and then we have our Switches.
I'm happy. I mean, I would be even happier if we had it sooner, but I mean, I'd rather have it done right and, have given them the time to build up, a good launch library. I'm definitely excited that, it's only really, 5 months from now, not even quite that.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well then, let's talk about the games next. This trailer was notable because it showed us, not lengthy, but, longer than you would expect for a 3.5 minute trailer, glimpses of a new Mario Kart game, a new Splatoon game, a new Mario 3D platformer, and interestingly, Skyrim by Bethesda. And it did appear to be Skyrim Remastered, which is coming to PC, Xbox One, and PS4 next week.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, nothing in this was a confirmation of release. All we know for sure, I think at this point, is Breath of the Wild and Just Dance 2017.
Well, no, there's actually a list of games that have been outright confirmed already, including the 2017 Sonic project. Square Enix has very specifically confirmed Dragon Quest X and XI.
Oh, that's right. So there's about maybe 6 to 9 titles,
but,
maybe?
But I think what Slagkick is speaking to is that, journalists have asked Bethesda specifically about the Switch port of Skyrim, and they have very pointedly said, while we did show footage of this game in the teaser trailer for the Switch, we don't have anything to announce at this time. A lot of people are taking this just to mean that, Nintendo hasn't yet lifted the cap on third parties formally announcing games.
Mm-hmm.
I am sort of the belief that this game is definitely coming. I think, the fact that it was the game that got the most footage in Nintendo's trailer, for me, is the clearest sign. I do not believe Nintendo is so silly as to highly feature a third-party game as, the centerpiece attraction of this promo and not have that game nailed down for their platform. Mm-hmm. I refuse to believe that. It defies all logic. But Slaggy is technically right. We are speculating about games that have not officially been announced, even if I think Nintendo would be shooting themselves in the foot. And part of why I say that is, for the Mario 3D platformer, there were so many new art assets in that thing. There were new design ideas that we saw in them. For the Mario Kart footage, it looked like a prettier version of Kart 8 with new playable characters.
Yeah, King Boo.
2 item slots, going back to Double Dash days. So, it's to the point where, if this was a mock-up, it was a pretty cruel effing mock-up to your fan base. It's not a mock-up, it's a mockery, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to proceed in this discussion, assuming that these are real games, because again, I refuse to believe that Nintendo is that stupid.
Yeah, and I couldn't clock, was that Mario Kart footage, were those tracks that we recognized from 8?
Yeah, it was Yoshi's Island, which was one of the classic tracks. Yoshi's Island, Yoshi's Circuit, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
Either way, it's the circuit that's in the shape of effing Yoshi.
Right.
The track that's in the shape of Yoshi. So, let's start off here, Slykick. How do you feel about Skyrim on NX, or Switch? We can also call the NS, which at least sounds phonetically very similar.
Right. I think that things like Skyrim is an audience that, an audience of gamers that Nintendo has, missed out on by not having these titles. I mean, we did see things where Assassin's Creed would come to the
Wii U?
Wii U and, you know, some of these other titles came to the Wii U, but, like, you know, they were not really viewed as worthwhile.
Yeah. You know, they would be, like, down ports. They wouldn't funk. They would not. Not only were they, like, downgraded in terms of, like, art assets and stuff, they also still, even with that concession, typically didn't run as well.
Right. So I think if we really do have Skyrim remastered, then, you know, because the thing is that for all that we know, you know, Microsoft and Sony keep saying, oh, we're not abandoning the PS4 and the Xbox One, that any game that we release for PS4 Pro or Scorpio, you know, will be, you know, we're not going to have exclusive games. I mean, that's what they've said, right?
That is a thing that has been said. I mean, whether for Scorpio, it's been a little less definite, Sony has definitely said that there will be no Pro exclusive games.
Whether they stay true to their word or not will remain to be seen, especially if they see Switch coming in and, you know, getting some of their third-party numbers. I mean, I think it's a sign that, you know, if they really do have Skyrim on that console, that it's going to dispel the whole idea that, Nintendo don't, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It can't run Skyrim. And, I mean, if it's Skyrim remastered, you know, and it's running it better than an Xbox One, then, you know, I mean, I definitely see, and we've seen a lot of third parties saying that they're going to be supporting the Switch. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah, there was a whole list of them. I don't have the list in front of me right this moment, but it had a lot of folks on it. Sega was on it. Platinum Games was on it. Square Enix was on it.
Bethesda.
The Tokyo RPG Factory studio was on it.
From Software.
From Software was a big one. Arc System Works. The Silicon
Atlas.
Studios. Atlas. Tecmo Koei. Bandai Namco.
Of course Bandai Namco.
Of course. So, you know, I mean, really, if this
Ubisoft,
yeah, Nipponichi was on that list.
And to be fair, Ubisoft's been good friends to Nintendo, even
even
if Zombie U did not really do well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's through no fault of Ubi. And, you know, they literally are one of the companies, as we discussed a few minutes ago, that has a title in the pipeline for NS already announced.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I feel like this is going to be Nintendo's opportunity to really, you know, hey, get some timed exclusives for the Switch, you know.
Well, I want to build off that question a little bit, even without talking about exclusives or paid timed exclusives. I want to talk a little bit about eating the other console manufacturers' lunches a little. I had been planning to get Skyrim remastered. Now I'm going to wait, because if it's coming out on the NS, I would rather have it as a portable game rather than something I can play on Sunday nights and no other day of the week, something that I could play any day of the week during my commute.
Yeah, I kind of think that Nintendo and Sony, Microsoft and Sony are probably a little bit like, oh, snap now. And I almost wonder if they're going to kind of backtrack on the whole non-exclusive thing with Pro and Scorpio. Oh,
I see. So you think they might do that to sort of further delineate themselves from the kinds of experiences that will be capable on the Switch?
We're still more powerful.
I can see that, because definitely, I mean, there is no context now where I would ever buy a game on the other consoles over a Switch version, even if they ran better, even if they had exclusive content.
Yeah, I mean,
the very simple fact that one of these I will have time to play and the other I will not makes that decision,
I mean, it's
very
hard for me, very
easy.
Of, like,
and I would expect that most Japanese gamers will fall into that exact same umbrella as me. And I'm sorry, you were trying to say.
I was just going to say, like, you know, I feel like there's very few exclusives for either Xbox or PlayStation that would really, you know, if we see the Switch have such good third-party support, that, you know, most of the games that I'd want to play would be coming to it. I mean, I could see myself not really being tempted to get future Sony and Microsoft consoles, TBH. I mean, I feel like there's always going to be a couple good, especially Sony.
Funny, because this is one of those things that makes me sort of highlight the differences in our gaming habits, because you're like, especially Sony gets the exclusives. I'm like, especially Microsoft gets the exclusives. I look at stuff like Forza Horizon, stuff like Gears of War. Closer, for me, those are the exclusives that are bigger to me. I guess for you, maybe you're thinking of stuff like Uncharted and God of War?
Well, I mean,
Gran Turismo?
I mean, now that you say that, I mean, I guess I think of the themes that, like, they used to have more exclusively.
And, you know, I want to know, to the degree that we know what hardware is in in the NS, and, you know, there's still a lot of question marks there, but we do know it is an NVIDIA Tegra-based chip. We do not yet know for sure if it is an X1 or an X2. If it's an X2, then we're probably going to see this thing being actually a little more powerful than the Xbox One. But quite tellingly, you know, the X2 is specifically designed to run, like, Unreal Engine 4 games very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal Engine 4 is meant to run super well on that thing. So if that's the chip that's in this thing, do you think Square Enix would take the opportunity to move all of their Unreal Engine 4 projects, which we know are coming? Stuff like, I think Nier Automata falls into that. I know Kingdom Hearts 3 falls into that. I believe Final Fantasy 7 Remake falls into that. You know, is there any reason you wouldn't buy these titles on the Switch given the opportunity?
Oh, that's what I was just going to say, is that for things like, you know, even hopefully if we get Mass Effect Andromeda and it runs well on the Switch. Like, I mean, the only thing I would be buying for PS4 or Xbox One would be the actual exclusives. I mean, if it runs, I mean, even if PS4 runs it a little better, like you said, the whole idea of having something that could be portable, I mean, just kills it for me. And I mean, like, kills it and kills the other ones, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about these four games that were shown a little more specifically, and then we'll have to move on. It's been a while since we've had this issue, but we're already past the hour mark, so we need to temper ourselves time-wise.
All from
a
3.5-minute trailer.
Dude, right? So, let's start off here with Mario. You know, they showed footage of the Mario game. Of the four games they showed, it was the one that looked the least furthest along, but we still got some interesting stuff in terms of, you know, in the background, getting confirmation of, like, the tightrope walking mechanics. We got the appearance of some large colorless crystals in the background. It looks like some of the items in the immediate environment are covered in ice, which is almost certainly going to tie into whatever game mechanic is in the game.
Hmm.
We have Mario's typical running and jumping art style, very similar to what we saw in 3D World, but with more complex lighting elements, which 3D World already had beautiful lighting, so that's ridiculous. What overall did you think of it, and what are you hoping for?
I mean,
from
the thing that's interesting is it's like, I mean, like we said, we don't know how early in development this still is. I mean, it looked really polished, but again, it could just be a tech demo for all we know. I thought it was interesting that it seems more down to earth, by which I mean like in a literal sense, or down to Mushroom Kingdom, I guess you could say. Because I mean, kind of, we thought after Galaxy, what's next? You know, is it going to be Universe, or we didn't know. So I mean, at first I was like, is that a remaster of Sunshine? Which then I was like, no, this is not a remaster of Sunshine. But you know, just I guess kind of a little surprised to see the setting be a little more
tropical,
a little more traditional.
Oh, okay.
Than, you know, because like I said, the whole idea of, like I said, I'm going to be curious what platforming elements the Mario Switch game does to really take the Mario platforming to the next level, because we've talked about, you know, Mario really being a series where when they iterate on it, you know, there's these huge pushes forward for gameplay. And with Galaxy, that was, you know, going running upside down on a little galaxy. Or, you know, I still think that they should be called planets, but I mean, they were called galaxies, so whatever.
Stick to the nomenclature they establish, I suppose.
So, you know, but I mean, like, running it upside down on those little galaxies. So, I mean, I'm really curious to see, because this is a series that we're so used to at this point over the past 20 years, like, pushing 3D platforming forward in, like, huge ways.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, is this one going to take a little scale back in favor of just being a really well-designed 3D platformer without any necessarily radical new ideas with platforming?
Well, and, you know, the funny thing is, that's actually, I think, what people are looking for at this point. I'm very curious to see how Nintendo tackles that. And again, you know, for me, I'm really excited because this is a game, assuming it is a game that comes out, hopefully it'll come out in 2017.
Launch window.
Well, I've seen a lot of people say that that'll probably be their first big holiday game.
Ah.
And, you know, that logic does track real tight, especially, you know, if, you know, your launch day game is going to be Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, potentially these what look like enhanced ports, you know, Splatoon and Mario Kart both look like they build on the Wii U versions, but add big chunks of new content,
so,
and even game,
like,
concepts.
A 1.5 or 8.5 or Splatoon 1.5.
Exactly. That's, in fact, I've seen people online refer to them that way.
I mean, I almost feel like we've heard a lot of buzz about Smash getting that sort of port idea.
Oh, dude. And I tell you, if they did that, you know, assuming that they price these 1.5s or remasters, or even if they are just called full-fledged sequels, if if they were to price them at like an under $60 price point, I think that would probably be for the best, since they're still largely games people have played before. Smash is the one exclusion to that, though. If they launched Smash with like literally one new character, Ice Climber, and all the DLC, and then packed it in with an Ice Climber amiibo,
oh yeah,
they could get away with charging up to like $80.
And
for
I mean,
that.
With, especially as a fighting game, I mean, you have like Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter Turbo, you know. So I mean, like for like a fighting game, like where you see these like iterations released, I think that they could definitely get away with it more. Like Kart and
Smash Brothers 4 Tournament.
I mean, so speaking of, you know, we talked a little bit about Mario Kart, which appeared to be 8 with a little bit of polish and, you know, King Boo and 2 item spots, but Splatoon had customizable hairstyles.
Yeah, yeah, it had customizable hairstyles, it had new clothing and weapon options.
So this could
and
be
Splatoon. And one map that we hadn't seen previously.
Yeah, this could be Splatoon or, you know, I mean, but either way, I mean, I'm on board for, I would rebuy Kart 8 and Smash and Splatoon. Like, I'm with wouldn't be salty about it.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so you actually just talked pretty much about all of the three Nintendo games. Last, of course, would be Skyrim. Where are you personally on Skyrim for NS?
I am one of the weirdos who never got around to playing Skyrim. Not out of lack of desire, I guess. I mean, at the time, kind of everyone was like, Skyrim, 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 and I was just kind of like, Charmander. So, I mean, I guess, I mean, maybe I kind of was a little bit avoidant of it because it was so everywhere. Oh, arrow to the knee. You know, it was kind of like
over it.com.
Yeah. But like at this point, you know, I've definitely been interested in it, especially with Remastered coming out. And but I mean, at this point, I would probably wait for the Switch version.
Excellent.
Oh, we didn't talk about the unnamed basketball game.
Oh, you know, and that wasn't just an unnamed basketball game. That was the 2K17 NBA game.
That is for sure. Because the Wired article I was reading was just saying that it was possibly NBA 2K17. But,
you know, people on Gaff had clocked it as NBA 2K17 literally minutes after the trailer finished.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I trust folks on Gaff a lot to make that kind
yeah,
of
I
quick
mean,
call.
Yeah, I don't have an experience with the NBA, but they, you know, they
and
showed.
And you're right, yeah, they did show, so that would have been a
fifth
game.
They showed the bros, that's where they were at the basketball court, and each had a little thing. There was a great edit of it that was on Vine, where they were the same dudes, but then they edited in the footage of Kaden and Mel Commander Shepard having romantic interludes. They're like, oh yeah,
yes, that's amazing. I need to see that.
But yeah, I mean, again, you know, sports games being a huge genre, one we typically don't even talk about on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Because I mean, typically it's not our bag, baby. But you know, I mean, that's a huge seller for a lot of people. That and Call of Duties. So I mean, if they're able to get you know, some good sports titles running well, and some Call of Duties or
and the Call of Duty games are actually ones that largely do come to even like the Wii U, so I think we can assume that that'll
uh-huh.
be present.
I mean, if we get like Destiny, although that'd be interesting about how Destiny would work, because I mean Destiny's an MMO. So
the thing is, yeah, some games, the thing is clearly they're open to MMOs, because you know, in Japan we'll be seeing Dragon Quest X coming to the NS, and with that in mind, you know, maybe some games will only be able to be played at home or, you know, with a bullet where you have an internet connection.
Some people,
and in that case, dude, if I could take Destiny with me and play it when I'm over at a buddy's house, like hanging out on game night or whatever, and, you know, I'm not in the middle of a board game, I want to run up a strike in Destiny real quick, that would be a very potent allure for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen some people saying like, oh, there's going to be a Wi-Fi only version and then a, you know, a 32 gig LTE version and a 64 gig LTE version.
I can think of one major console we saw do that. It was called the Vita, and it did not work out.
Yeah, those LTE versions, people were not. And was it even LTE? Was it 3G?
I don't really recall.
I think at
the
time
band.
It was 3G. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I don't see Nintendo getting in bed with data plans. I mean, even though they are working with DNA, do a lot of mobile stuff. That's the other thing I'm interested in, is do you think we're going to be seeing things like, I mean, I guess if there's no data, then we really couldn't do a Pokemon Go or something.
Well, and that's, you know, that's something. I don't think we'll see Pokemon Go support for this thing. I do think we'll see their games with DNA ported, stuff like Super Mario Run.
Yeah.
That I do expect. And, you know, we don't have word on this. Nintendo has not officially confirmed that the in-portable mode, so to speak, the NS will have a touch screen. But all of the devs and people that have dev kits say that the dev kit does have a touch screen.
It seems almost certain at this point. I mean, its form factor is a tablet, and to have something that's essentially a tablet and not have a touch screen almost seems silly.
Indeed. And, you know,
2017. And, you know, that's also curious. We did not see any gameplay where they were, you know, touching it, but I mean, the Joy-Cons detach, and, you know, that's something that I remember when we were talking about. I'm like, oh, I think that it might have some sort of, you know, attachable device. And I mean, I think even back then you were kind of unsure about, like, you know, whether there were going to be something like the Joy-Con L&R. I mean, I kind of had clocked that, but I mean, so I mean, I'm wondering if there's going to be, like, you know, touch-based games where, you know, you can just play it like a tablet. I mean, we also don't know what the OS is going to look like either.
Indeed. You know, and you keep talking about the mobile and tablet form factor. One of the interesting pieces of speculation I saw, and this was courtesy of Anthony over on the
Nintendo Love Fest,
is that he thinks that the reason Nintendo waited so long to unveil this thing, you know, we all kind of knew that they had been concerned about other hardware manufacturers sort of cribbing their ideas. He posited the interesting idea that it isn't Microsoft and Sony that they were worried about cribbing these ideas. He was thinking that it was probably more like Apple and, you know, Google, Samsung et al.
Yeah,
cribbing,
I mean,
their idea for, you know, a mobile device that has, you know, slide-on, lock-on controllers that are customizable.
I mean, there's one of the NVIDIA Shield thingies is kind of like that, right? There's a Shield tablet, I think.
Yeah, but it has like a docky controller thing. It's not like this weird slide-clicky guy.
Right, it's like, but it's kind of like slides in and goes...
Yeah, so I thought that was actually a really interesting take on this, and I think that is probably most likely. So, you know, with that in mind, I'd like to talk a little bit more about what we think we know and what has been said about this thing. Over on Silicon Era, we found this great collection of quotes from a couple of different devs and publishers. Yves Guillermo over at Ubisoft, for example, had to say that, you know, with Nintendo Switch's unique capacities and design, Nintendo could again redefine the way we play games. We had Sega, of course, talking about Sega and Nintendo have been great partners over the years. We continue to support the Nintendo Switch. Square Enix, of course, saying very similar, you know, they're more than happy to support the promising game system and enhance their ongoing partnership with Nintendo. Atlas referred to the console as a perfect fit for you know, some of their games. So it seems like people are really stoked. We have, you know, all of the people, developers who have dev kits now are starting to talk. All of the people who previously we thought of as leakers, people who have been quote-unquote leaking stuff on this thing since March that all turned out right. People like Emily Rogers is a big one. You know, basically everyone is talking about this thing. Have you heard anything from any of those voices, Slaggy, that you're like particularly excited or not excited about?
You know, I think overall I'm just happy that, you know, we sort of clocked this for what it was with all of our speculative episodes and, you know, based on the rumors and the trademarks and stuff that we had had. So I'm very pleased with, you know, so far what we've pretty much thought the NX was going to be is what the Switch is turning out to be. And so, I mean, I think that any sort of buzz or speculation that we're getting seems pretty likely, you know?
Yeah. Especially from people like Emily Rogers, who is, of course, the one who is, you know, really selling the idea that this thing's going to be region-free, that it does have, you know, the touch screen. So we're definitely getting, you know, this information. I'm definitely a big believer in a lot of it. I'm obviously hyped beyond hype for this thing. And in fact, she's the one who is pushing the idea that we actually may be getting more information on this thing next week at the Nintendo Investors Conference.
Despite Nintendo saying they're not going to be giving any other information this year.
But, you know, while Nintendo did say that, they did, after the fact, after they said that, clarify that the Switch controller will, or the Switch device will not be able to be used as a second console during at-home gaming.
Mm-hmm. Also that it won't have DS or 3DS backwards compatibility.
Indeed, and those were both confirmed after Nintendo said they wouldn't be talking anymore about
Wii U
it. So we may still have a little bit more information to come. A lot of people, of course, are still wondering about the price on this thing. Previously, the the leakers, again, who have turned out to be surprisingly reliable, had indicated that this thing would probably be selling for less than we expect when we hear about it. So I'd like to hear from you a little, Slaggy. What are sort of your thoughts on realistically what you think this thing is going to cost?
I mean, I think $299 is the safe estimate.
Yeah, you know, I actually largely agree, and I largely base that on sort of the launch price of the Vita, how tech has changed since then, and the tech that we know and believe to be in this thing. You know, even if it is a Tegra X2, we had the previous gossip and rumor that, you know, Nintendo had sort of worked out a sweetheart deal with Nvidia on the tech. It does turn out that this tech is what's going to be in the device. It makes me wonder if, you know, the sweetheart deal is true. And if it is, it's possible that Nintendo could sell this thing at a profit and still have it be a relatively low price. I mean, it's hard to imagine for me, like, buying a PlayStation 4 Pro over a Switch if the Pro really is going to be, you know, $100 more than the Switch or whatever. Like, I just wouldn't be able to justify it then. So it, to me, you know, it's definitely interesting stuff. I agree with you. I think $299 is the safe bet for this thing. But if they could get it down to $249 or even like $229, it would become almost an impulse purchase for a lot of people. And I think that would help Nintendo a lot next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd also like to hear, is there anything else that we haven't covered here that you expect from this device that you, not that you hope, but that you expect?
I don't think it's going to move Wii numbers, at least not initially. I think that there's going to be a little hesitation.
Well, and let me ask you this. Do you think it is helpful or hurtful that they toughed it out with the Wii U for as long as they did and didn't abandon the Wii U?
I think if they had tried to abandon the Wii U, we wouldn't have had a console that would have been quite this ready, you know, to do what they were trying to accomplish.
I think that's a good angle. In terms of market perception, do you think that has any value? And if so, positive or negative to the general market consumer?
I think Nintendo haters going to Nintendo hate no matter what.
I don't necessarily mean Nintendo haters. I mean like Johnny and Bobby's mom who's shopping for, you know, next year's Christmas gift. Is she going to be like, oh man, this should have come out sooner? Or is she going to be like, oh man, I'm glad even if it was an anemic at best lineup that the Wii U still had games into 2017?
The Wii U, I mean, by the time the Switch is out, we'll have had about a 4.5 year lifespan.
Which is not an unheard of lifespan for a console.
A little shorter than we're used to, but I mean...
Well, especially these days with, you know, the HD twins having, what, like a 9 year lifespan?
But,
something
then,
ridiculous?
In a similar way, what I think is that Johnny and Bobby Mario with their soccer mom, she probably won't feel like, I feel like I just bought you a Nintendo. Didn't I just buy you a Nintendo? She'll be like, oh yeah, I guess that was a while ago that we got the Nintendo. Now this one reminds me of my Kindle Fire. So, I mean, you know, compared to a kid being like, no, mom, I need the PS4 Pro. It's going to allow me to do more epic nukes in Call of Duty, mom. If you don't buy it, you're a bitch. Because kids are terrible. But, you know, like, what I'm saying is that, like, I feel like, I mean, even with the 3DS, like, oh, no, honey, you don't need a new one of those. You just got one. No, but this one's better. I mean, I think we could all relate to that at some point in our lives. Even justifying it to ourselves. Like, oh, do we really need this one? Whether it's ourselves justifying it or the soccer mom saying, oh, no, honey, you don't need that. I mean, I think to myself with the 3DS, I mean, you know, the 3DS, 3DS XL, new 3DS XL, new 3DS non-XL. I mean, the 3DS has gone through so many iterations, so...
Yeah.
I guess I kind of flipped around what you were saying, though. I mean, I don't think that they, like, really abandoned it. So, I mean, I guess they... I feel like if they had tried to iterate and have, like, a Wii U 2 or, like, a Wii U 0.5 or something, that would have... been a less wise market choice.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. All right, well, let's wrap this conversation up with, you know, continuing the speculation tip, but going into the direction of hopes. I'd like to hear about what you hope for the device from a hardware standpoint, and what games do you hope are going to come to the hardware?
I mean, if it's, like, because I'm not so picky that I'm going to be like, oh, this looks better on on PS4 than it does on Xbone. I mean, obviously, I'd probably go with the PS4 version if I had a choice, but like I said, said, as long as it is, you know, comparable to that level, I mean, I think I'm going to be very happy with it. I just really hope that we see things like, you know, Mass Effect Andromeda, like all these third-party titles that we're, you know, always so excited to hear about and that we're talking about on GameBuoy. You know, I mean, I definitely hope that all of the Square Enix stuff does make its way over. I mean, like, you know, Kingdom Hearts down the line. So, yeah, I mean, I really hope that, you know, the third-party support really is going to be as strong as it seems. I also hope that the, like, the user interface and whatever kind of OS this is running is good. I mean, I guess not that I had any, like, huge problems with the Wii U, but, I mean, you know, I mean, we were talking this week, ourselves and Sulker, when we were talking about 3DS transfer woes for various reasons and just kind of how a mess that was. So I really hope that, I feel like with Wii U, they really did well with online and how do you know have like their eShop really work well. So I really hope that, you know, the online experience is smooth. And yeah, I mean, other than that, I feel like it's going to take a lot. It would take a lot of blah for it to really disappoint me because I was not disappointed by the Wii U. I understand that it didn't reach the potential that it should have, but I mean, I hope that it delivers the solid experience that I'm hoping for.
Excellent, excellent. Let's see, for me, I would like, from a hardware perspective, I definitely hope it is running that X2 chip. I think that if the NS, really is at least on the tier of the Xbox One in terms of power, that it will definitely be like a viable candidate for multi-platform games, and that's what I really want out of this
thing.
I would love it if I effectively had no reason to load up my Xbox One and PS4 other than like playing Blu-ray movies and the occasional, you know, Forza Horizon
and
or
PSVR.
Gears of War. And PSVR, yeah, that I'm fine with my PS4 just being a PSVR box.
I mean, you kind of have to wonder if the fact that PlayStation focused so much on VR is a result of them kind of seeing what was coming down the line with the NX, you know, because, I mean, these rumors were buzzing around, so.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because the PSVR is actually, as of its week one sales in Japan, doing very well in Japan. And it does sort of make me wonder, similar to what you're saying, if the market realities of console gaming, especially in Japan, aren't dictating Nintendo and Sony's real focus. You know, Nintendo on sort of unifying into one device that is both portable and stationary, and Sony focusing on this VR thing that the other consoles can't even touch right now.
And Microsoft, you'll get there, buddy.
Right? They'll
You're kind of the Pope Leo of this whole generation.
I do think that they will find a sort of niche to fill, and it would be interesting.
I guess it wasn't the Kinect.
It wasn't, but they did. That's clearly, you know, they're trying. I think we'll see them go the most in the direction of like a set-top box. It'll play any media you throw at it.
Well,
practically,
I mean,
like a Roku server, you know, out of the box.
I mean, that's what the Bone really was trying to aim for.
Well, and that's what I mean. I think that we'll continue to see them double down on that direction. And I think that's good. I think the market is at its best when we have three players all going in different directions so that we have a multitude of different experiences. When things are super homogenized like this, that's when I think we get the less, you know, the least, you know, diverse software, the fewest experiences. I'm excited about everything about this announcement.
I mean, if you think
of
something like Mass Effect, if it's like, if the Switch is going to run it well, I mean, that's just going to be more sales for them. And I feel like, you know, the thing is that the people who aren't going to want to Switch are still going to buy these games for their preferred console. So, you know, I don't think that even though for us, in the way that we play and, you know, our approach to gaming, that we would prefer to play these games on the Switch, and that's where we would be building our libraries mostly. There's going to be people who aren't going to buy the Switch, like whether they're Nintendo haters or just like, it's not for me. And so they'll be buying their Mass Effect Andromeda on PS4 or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, are there any specific games that you're hoping for? I know for me, I mentioned I really hope that, you know, the big hitters out of Square Enix come to this thing.
Yeah.
Because it'd be great, you know, it's always tough when I have to, like, try and schedule a day off because, oh, a new Kingdom Hearts I want to play. It'd be great if I didn't have to do that this time. What about you? Is there any software that's, like, on your radar that you're hoping makes
Persona.
Its way to Switch? Persona. Okay, you had that one ready, huh?
I'd love to see... I'd like to see Mario Maker, and I'd like to see them kind of fix what they... fix the shadiness. I mean, I don't know if that really has any relevance here, but...
What do you mean by fix the shadiness?
Oh, we're going to delete your stages, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, yeah, but I don't think that has anything to do with NS as a platform.
I mean, I'd love to see Mario Maker take it to the next level and like be able to make a full little Mario experience, even if it's just if you can't play it outside of Mario Maker. But like I get salty that like if you're playing my Mario Maker levels and I'm trying to design it like my own Mario World levels, like I was doing for a while, and had like, you know, the Cocoa Caverns or whatever they might have been, Cacao Caverns, you know, you can't play them through like a subsequent series of levels and, you know, really have like, you know, Star Worlds and stuff. I mean, I think that there's so much more potential for something like a Mario Maker, so I'd like to see that. But yeah, really just aside from like Persona and the Square Enix stuff, just, you know, my faves like the Mass Effects and all that.
Excellent. Awesome. Yeah, I would also love to see Mass Effect Andromeda come to this thing. I have my doubts, unfortunately, but I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed. All right, well, with all that having been said, we have about a half hour to wrap this episode up. I think we probably need to move on. Do you have any parting thoughts on NX?
I do. Just that I really, I guess this kind of goes with a hope or a vision or whatever, and kind of tying back to what you were saying about, or your question about the 3DS and whether it's dead, I'm envisioning that this is going to consolidate my portable and my console gaming experience into one thing. So, you know, in the past where I'm like, oh, do I get Yoshi's Woolly World or do I get Yo-Kai Watch? Like, I'm like, you know, when I'm coming down making these budget decisions about buying games, like, oh, well, I could get a portable game and then, like, you know, play it at home, but it's, you know, portable and it's, you know, kind of like lower tech, or I get the shiniest new console game and, you know, I'm only stuck playing it at home. If I can be like, oh, this month there's going to be Hyrule Warriors 2 and, you know, some other game or whatever, like maybe like a Kirby game, and like I can budget for them both without being like, oh, I have to only play this at home, or, oh, well, this game is going to not be as like quite offering what the console Kirby's do because, you know, it's limited by what the 3DS can do. So, I mean, does that make sense?
Yes.
As a budget-minded gamer, I won't have to be like, oh, and there's another cute 3DS limited edition coming out that I'm tempted to buy, you know, although I will miss that.
Yeah, that is, well, you know, if nothing else, if you do plan on taking this thing places, you'll probably need a carrying case, so I guess you could accessorize with fashionable carrying cases for a fraction of the price of buying a new fashionable console.
Right, and I mean, at least the new 3DS non-XL had the faceplates, which, yes, you know, right way to go.
Indeed. All right, well,
how about you?
What?
Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I'm day one for me. I want this thing. I need it. It definitely fits a need I have in my life. So for me, I'm just so happy that this thing is a hybrid, that it works the way it does. It's exactly what I want to need, and I'm so stoked.
I just hope that there's no pre-order fuckery and being like, oh. But I feel like pre-ordering consoles has gotten a lot more smooth over the past years. It's not like when 10 years ago when we were trying to get Wii's and, you know, you
wait
had
in line on midnight. Some random day at midnight at GameStop.
Just to get the pre-order.
For a pre-order.
So I feel like I'm not going to have to worry about a midnight launch.
You know what had a great pre-order setup was the Wii U.
Yeah.
Strolled into Walmart, you know, like 3 months before launch, paid a $50 down payment, and you had it locked on lock and could pick it up at midnight the day of release.
Yeah.
That was perfect. If they do that similar for the Switch, I will definitely partake. Having these things at midnight on the day of launch is like my ideal.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that let's say that it happens to be on a weekend or something.
And typically Nintendo hardware releases on Sundays, so that's, you know, midnight Saturday night.
So instead of being like, oh, well, I guess I've got to go home to play Breath of the Wild. I mean, although I probably wouldn't be playing Breath of the Wild while I was at the SS Game Buoy, but we could be like, hey, we could be playing our Switches at the same time, hopefully with some sort of multiplayer element.
And you say that, but then if that happened, we could each put in, like, the night of, we get back, put 2 hours each into Breath of the Wild, and then the next day record an episode of Game Buoy about the first 2 hours of Breath of the Wild.
Initial impressions. We're not yawning because we're bored. We didn't sleep.
Girl, oh. Come on now. As if we aren't routinely up on weekends until, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. Come on.
Try, like, 5 or 6 a.m.
All right. How much more anime can we fit in the night?
No, Captain Spike's like, so I beat Breath of the Wild last night. I chose to, because, you know, they said you could beat it within, like, the first half hour, right?
I suppose they did.
So you're going to just plow through that and do it, and I'll be like, I'm still collecting twigs to build Link's little tent shelter. Yeah,
I'm sure you want to pop Link's tent. I get it. All right, we're moving forward. We are definitely going to be talking a lot more about the Nintendo Switch in the next 5 months. Please look forward to it.
For the next 5 years. Sorry, man.
Fingers crossed, right? All right, well, let's talk a little bit about what we've been playing on...
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, I have had a heavy flow this week, so Slaggy, why don't you go?
And I feel like you've been playing a lot of the same things I have. For me, the big ones are, of course, World of Warcraft Legion, which I'm having trouble saying. Definitely still really enjoying it. I think it's one of the most solid expansions in the game so far. And I've started working on my priest, so now that I have my Demon Hunter at max level and he's tanking, while I'm kind of waiting for the guild to be ready to do full raiding and stuff, I'm working on getting my priest leveled up, so you know, definitely enjoying the, like, class only content with the order halls and stuff, and you know, also feeling a little less pressured to be like, oh, I have to get the reputation grinds necessarily, because my other guy, my demon hunter, already has, like, you know, made good headway into getting the revered
nice
reputation that we'll need to unlock the flying account wide eventually. I'm really excited about by the time this is airing on VOG Network and up on GameBuoy.org. We'll be patch 7.1 already, so I'm really looking forward next time to hopefully... We don't quite yet know about what the attunement for Karazhan as a 5-man mythic is going to be, but hopefully it won't be too crazy, and I think that we'll definitely be able to get a guild group together. Other than that, the other big one for me this week was Civ 6. Initial impressions, I really like it a lot. You know, I love Civ 5. I feel like Civ 6 isn't so much where, like, oh, I can tell that Captain Spike's gonna win because, like, you know, he clearly has a lead right now. He's building the most wonders. Just the way that the game plays out, it kind of, the pace of it feels a little different. Like, you know, building a builder, which is the new version of a worker, normally you'd have to send them to a tile and they'd build an improvement over, you know, so many 5 or so turns, but then you could, you know, use the builder as many times as you wanted. Now they have a certain number of uses, but they immediately build the improvement, which I think really helps you get your Civ up and running. I really like the idea of the districts, and, you know, kind of strategically placing it like, oh, well, the, you know, holy site, the holy district gets a bonus for being near a mountain. So kind of really, you know, whereas in the past, all of the things that you were built would be, like, you know, in within your city. This time you're building the Stonehenge or whatever. You place a tile for it, and you're like, so it really makes you feel kind of more like, oh, hey, you know, there's my Stonehenge, instead of it just being kind of like randomly put somewhere, and then the rest of your tile improvements being like, oh, cattle, resources. Like, the idea of the tile improvements really being a lot more diversified and kind of making the, like, oh, you know, I don't have to have every other thing just be a farm to get food or whatever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like, actually something I really enjoyed as well.
Quality of life changes, like the trade routes being automatically building roads. That's really nice. I haven't spent too much time. We put in about 3 hours in a multiplayer game. I definitely intend on spending a lot more time with it over, you know, the next couple of years until Civ 7 comes out. So I'm very happy with it. Religion seems to be very similar. I haven't gotten to espionage yet, but Seawolf Jason was saying that spies work in a really cool way. I haven't had a use for it yet, but, like, you can attach a warrior and a settler together so that you can be protected when you're trying to send a settler out and, you know, having barbarians try and steal it. So overall, I'm really happy with how it's playing out. I think that it's, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience with Civ 4 I went back after Civ 5, so I mean, I think I like it a little better than Civ 5 so far. But, you know, for me, I'm just really happy that it's here. It looks great. And I mean, I see it being my main Civ for now, unless there's a reason to go back to Civ 5.
Yeah, I totally agree with a lot of that. And, you know, the real go-to that I've been using and explaining to people, because, you know, everyone's asking me how I feel about it, how I think it is that somehow Firaxis managed to make the game both more accessible and also more complex, which I think is a hell of a tight rope to walk. And I think they handled it with aplomb. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, like in our game, like Seawolf Jason was doing really well with religion. I was doing really well with culture, and you were doing really well with like military and stuff. And yet I didn't feel like that, like, oh, I should just give up and, you know, just enjoy building my little town and little civilization because you clearly have it in the bag. I felt like it really could go any way. And, you know, I was even leading in points for, you know, quite a while. Not that the points necessarily matter too much until you like run out of time.
Well, and something that I think is interesting is that, you know, while it does have the traditional point scale in the game, I actually didn't even look at it the entire time because I found it more useful to look at the scales where it shows you specifically like who has the strongest army,
right,
who has, you know, the most economic function, who has the most culture function, who has, you know.
Uh-huh. For a while, I had the most religion, and then I noticed Seawolf Jason trying to spread his religion, and I was like, uh-uh. And so, you know, that definitely kind of gave me a heads up on, you know, oh, maybe double down more on my culture.
Well, and exactly, because, you know, overall points don't really mean a single lick if someone else is ahead in, you know, culture and it takes the game that way, even if they have a fraction of your points. So I definitely think that the game more clearly outlines what the best path to victory is for you as you're playing. And I think that's a tremendous benefit.
I like that you get bonuses to technology based on like other things you've done. I feel like also like if you don't I've got to research this technology or else I'm just going to get far behind. I didn't feel like I was super far behind. Now, I mean, I feel like I probably should have expanded a little more, but I mean, I felt like I was making pretty good progress in my Civ.
Well, and on that line, how do you feel about this tech boost system where the game basically gives you these little goals, and upon completing them, you get a boost to your active research.
I really liked
tech.
That, and it kind of made me, it's almost like little quests in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, encouraged me to do things, and I like the way the new Civics plays out. You kind of get like these wild cards to play. Just really happy with it. Last thing I was playing, and I'm going to direct you over to Stabcast.org for that is
Stabcast.org.
My impressions on the Pokemon Sun and Moon demo. I can't wait. I'm so hyped to download that on the 18th.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's see. For me, playing WoW, not a very different experience from what Slaggy has going on. I kind of feel like I'm treading water right now until the next Raid Finder raid goes up. And, you know, the new content with the new patch, of course, will be good. Mainly because, you know, I'm just a little landlocked as far as, like, not having a lot of people that I play with. So I can't really run, like, mythics with them or what have you.
Right, I've kind of not even done quests a lot.
So, you know, that's sort of where I'm at. I'm still enjoying the game, still loving it. Played through the new expansion in Destiny. Played, you know, all of the questy stuff for the most part. Working on some odds and ends, getting into, you know, strikes, and hopefully eventually getting into the raid. I'm really enjoying it. I think the new patch is fantastic. Civ 6, I don't have a whole lot to say about because I basically chimed in while Slaggy was talking about it. I've been playing a lot of Overwatch due to the Halloween event, like I mentioned earlier in this episode. Overwatch remains amazing, and the Halloween stuff is just so fantastically designed. It's just really great fun.
Yeah.
The other big thing to talk about, though, is PSVR.
Ooh, yeah.
I have put a lot of time into PSVR already. I am a huge fan. You know, I've had a couple of people who have seen me tweeting about it and have asked me, you know,
I've seen you play Collateral Damage in person. That was a hoot.
If I, you know, would recommend people buy it. And for me, I think the best thing I can say is that PSVR works as advertised. If you're looking for a lightweight entry into VR, you know, user-friendly, not a whole lot of, you know, sort of hardware barriers getting in the way, you don't have to build a new PC or what have you. I think it is absolutely a fantastic purchase. You know, the experience is really great. I'm really enjoying my time with it. Particularly big shout out to Until Dawn Rush of Blood, which manages to both be a shooting gallery type game and like a terror filled, like Halloween style roller coaster ride. Definitely been having a lot of fun having friends over to play that one. So I'm really enjoying PSVR, and I can't wait for more varied experiences to come to it. And we should wrap this thing up. So, Slaggy, you have some social links for us?
I do. We have social links. Question of the week is, Nintendo Switch has been unveiled. What are your thoughts on the now confirmed console portable hybrid? Even though Nintendo says it's primarily console first. It's funny, we think a lot of us are saying it's a portable first, but I'm going to start over on Facebook where we asked the bonus question. Now that we've seen a list of third-party support for the Switch, what games or series would you most want to see on the platform? Starting out with Colin M, saying, it looks neat, but I have questions. Backwards compatibility with digital titles? How will it emulate 3DS DS titles? Will virtual console games transfer over, or will I have to rebind them? There's definitely time to get these questions answered before release, so no rush. And then we have a lovely, thoughtful post from Anthony over from the Nintendo Love Fest podcast saying, thoughts and feelings, I got them. A lot of stuff I've read saying this is a huge departure for Nintendo. In reality, I think the only real departure was in the advertising theme. No kids, clearly aimed at the millennial for the reveal. Of course, Nintendo will continue to be a family-friendly company. So this isn't a departure. In fact, this is a culmination of Iwata's work on the DS, Wii, 3DS, and Wii U, his parting gift. Aww. Yes, the Wii U was a failure, but it was a necessary one to make the Switch work. I think of in terms of what it can probably do all the Wii U can, motion control touchscreen, and maybe even dual screen with the TV, although now we know not that. They just don't want to reveal it with that, as they don't want to appear as another Wii U initially. I was interested to see DNA on the developer list, as it made me feel that the mobile games coming to iPhone and Android could show up here too, and maybe first of all. Speaking of Apple and Google, and I've spoke to Captain Spike about this is what you were saying, Spike, I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo's delay of revealing the Switch was so that Apple, Samsung, and Google didn't steal the ideas for the next tablets, particularly detachable controllers, and not worries over Xbox and PlayStation, who are off chasing VR. I'm almost certain within 18 months we'll see an iPad player or a Google Pixel Gamer Edition that incorporates a tablet with snap-on and snap-off controllers for gaming on the go without virtual buttons. The other thing that's exciting about the system is swap out Joy-Cons. Imagine a 2D game shipping with its own Joy-Con with a full D-pad where the analog stick should be, a card trading game with a Joy-Con you can swipe cards, although I suppose amiibo cards could do similar, or just being able to faceplate the controller and say, you know what, today is a pink Princess Peach kind of day and snap on that Joy-Con. Definitely. And he said like this, and he linked a Nintendo Life post that has a mock-up from Twitter user DevSF4, and it's really cute. If you haven't seen this yet, Captain Spike, it's the one where it's got like the Famicom, Super Famicom, Virtual Boy, N64, GameCube, and Wii and Wii U sort of color schemes for Joy-Cons, and I mean, I think it's really cute. I hope for special Joy-Cons as well.
Excellent. Yeah, me too.
Over on the Twitterverse, to start out, we have Your Enzyme saying, Nintendo once again trying to convince me to live a life I'll never have. Other than the guy who didn't want to stop playing Zelda so his dog could shit, none of those situations are realistic. We really don't know enough at this point to make any reasonable conclusions, though. The Switch needs to have full eShop backwards compatibility with both the Wii U and 3DS. Yeah, I mean, I hope that there's some sort of, at least virtual console at this point, you know? I mean, it would be, or at least, I don't know. We'll have to see what they do there.
Yeah, this is just another one of those things where it's like, I get everything Your Enzyme is saying, and, you know, I never want to shoot anyone down, but I think my needs are just really different. Like, I get for him that, like, situations are unrealistic, maybe, in this ad, but for me, for example, it is very normal that when, you know, I have people visiting from out of town and we're using our, you know, local train system, I'm always like, oh, make sure to bring your 3DS, we'll play Mario Kart on BART, or Mario BART, as we call it.
Ah!
So for me, it's like, this is like super realistic. Like, I always have my 3DS on me. I'm always like, let's do this. We're at a movie theater waiting for a movie that's not going to start for another 20 minutes. Let's play some 3DS.
D&D, and there's some things that need to be worked out with the DM and a player. And
right, they're... or our DM who has a baby is putting the baby to bed. Or, you know, like, it's, oh, two people are in this scenario. They're off on a solo adventure. We're going to have 20 minutes of downtime. Pull out your 3DS.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, that ad actually did speak to my own life. I get that it didn't for yours. And of course, you know, not everyone's needs are going
to
be the same.
I do have to say, I hope that there's, and we kind of talked about this, you know, like I was saying with Yumi and Salker talking about our, like, transferring 3DS stuff. And at least at this point, if you're, you know, unable to transfer from a 3DS to a 3DS, if your purchases are tied to your Nintendo Network console, that you can at least download, say, like, you know, your digital titles from the eShop onto your same 3DS. I do hope that, like, you know, moving forward with, like, something like virtual console, that they're able to make it, that even if you have to rebuy it again, for the Switch that, you know, moving forward, maybe you don't have to keep rebuying it. So hopefully this, if the Switch platform is what's kind of moving forward.
Yeah. I will say, I hope for like virtual console type stuff, we do get full 3DS and Wii U backwards compatibility. We already know there is not going to be dual screens. So I do not think we will see any 3DS backwards compatibility for anything that is like 3DS native running.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, people are saying, this is kind of side note, that, oh, Pokemon Sun and Moon, I don't think it's coming to, I don't think it's going to be coming to Switch. I think we'll see 7th gen.
I wouldn't be surprised if we got our third iteration there. I don't think that would be surprising at all if we got a slightly graphically version.
7th gen, right? I mean 8th gen, I guess, at this point, right?
But I do think, you know, Sun, Moon, and then we'll get like Earth or something. And I mean, to me, I could see that as like an easy slam dunk for Switch sales, you know, a year after the fact.
I almost would wonder if it would be more of like a Black 2, White 2, though, where it's a...
Hey, I'd take that too. Sun and Moon 2, why not?
Anyway, one last tweet comes from...
And of course, I just want to say, Your Enzyme, of course I respect your opinions. I disagree. For me, like, we do know enough for me to pretty reasonably say, like, this is a device that meets my needs. I will be buying it.
Yeah. Boy from 1983, unrelated to the Nintendo Switch, says, just listen to the GameBuoy.org podcast and Spike Point. You have the perfect radio voice, dude. WTF.
Oh my gosh. Hearts at you right now so much.
And Boy from 1983 tweeting us from out in Belgium. So thanks for the international listen. All right, with that, I think we are wrapping it up here. So thank you so much for all your feedback. We thrive on it, and we wouldn't be 5 years down the line here without your feedback and your support. So we love your iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
We do. You can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Oh, there he is. And our home base is gamebuoy.org, where you can get
gamebuoy.org.
123 of these puppies.
Indeed.
Captain Spike, what are some podcasts that people should listen to?
We got some podcasts. They're huge.
Huge
especially
podcasts.
In China. So you should check out the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can hear us, as well as such lovely shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice on from whom we steal basically all of our cues. You can also listen to Shane Alenko and I talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the Japanese Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based over on Ranger Pridecast. Last but definitely not least, you can hear the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In non-VOG shows, I'd like to point you in the direction of the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Slaggy's show Reading is Fundamental, where myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness talk about the current season of the RuPaul's Drag Race series. There's only one episode to go in the current series, and I hope you join us over there. We have a lot of fun. Slaggy, take us to a game bar.
I want to take you to a game bar, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, La Palanca Podcast, Podcast Por y Para, Gay Gamers Latino Americanos en Español, and the Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. I'd be remiss not to mention our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. And I'd also like to shout out our sister shows. One of them is part of the SS Buoy Fleet. We have Anime Buoy making a grand return with a Danganronpa episode, so definitely look forward to us at least giving you monthly anime content. Anime Buoy is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And of course, I'd like to shout you out to the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast over at stabcast.org. We love our .orgs.
Stabcast.org.
And Stabcast, or the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, is your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. We just did some episodes about Pokemon gender and our impressions with Pokemon Sun and Moon demo and the various leaks that came about with that. So,
indeed.
Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back now, but will forever be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain for them.
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, it has been a real pleasure to speak to you all this lovely Sunday afternoon / evening. But it is time to go and have some dinner because I hunger. So with all that having been said, thank you as always for your support, your listenership. We'll be back at you in a week or two. But until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
Never tear us apart.